Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. After the Champlain Towers South condominium building collapsed in Surfside, Florida last year, the nation's attention turned first to rescue, then recovery, and finally blame. Families of victims and survivors reached a tentative nearly billion-dollar settlement in the case last week, and state lawmakers in Florida are working on legislation that would prevent another collapse. At the center of the tragedy is the role of the condo association in managing finances and building maintenance. Although the seaside corrosion issues of Southern Florida aren't relevant to Ohio residents, knowing how condominiums, cooperatives, and homeowners associations work is important before you buy. Columbus attorney Janice Katz wrote about the issue for the spring edition of the Columbus Bar Lawyers Quarterly. Janice, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you very much. It's good to see you on Zoom. And I'm sitting next to my Aunt Annabelle Jaffe, who turned 100.
Okay, thanks. Happy birthday. Jim Ambrosio is a member of the board of the Central Ohio Chapter of the Community Associations Institute. It's an education and advocacy organization made up of homeowner and condo association board members and professionals who serve those communities. And you are one of those professionals. I thought it was going to tell me what company you work for, but Jim Ambrosio, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me in.
Okay, so let's talk, Jim, about what kind of conversations that organization has been having over the past 9 to 10 months since the condo collapse and all of the publicity that it raised.
Yeah, it's definitely been the biggest topic of conversation over the last year or so since the collapse of the building in Florida. I think first and foremost, the reaction was, as you mentioned, why did this happen? Trying to point blame. Trying to figure out, you know, what steps were taken or not taken that led to that tragedy. Since then, I think a lot of the efforts from CAI, the organization I'm a member of, have shifted to trying to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And so one of the largest things that's happened since then is Fannie and Freddie, as was mentioned in the article, have strengthened their oversight on the issue. So companies like us, when a resale of a unit in one of these condominiums is going to occur, there's a lot of questions that are asked about what the association's financial stability are.
So this is the lender
asking
the questions.
This is the lender asking the questions. And prior to the building collapse, there's a lot more, you know, check the box type stuff. Whereas now the questions are a lot more serious. They're a lot more thorough, as they should be. But it's been putting volunteer boards of directors and management companies such as ours in a tough position, because now we're being asked specific questions on things that maybe haven't been, you know, thoroughly inspected yet, and we don't have a lot of knowledge on the topic yet.
Are you finding that individual buyers, you know, or people that are looking at condos and you know, residents in these kind of organizations are being more intentional as well?
I don't know about that yet. I think so far it's been more so with the lender and the people that are involved in the transaction. We haven't heard a lot from the individual buyers themselves asking more deliberate questions. But, you know, as the, you know, process continues to be more stringent, and as I think especially if loans continue to not be able to get done because of the answers that are being, you know, received on these questionnaires and things like that, buyers, I think, are going to become a little bit more knowledgeable of that and start to ask more questions themselves.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking about what to look for when you're thinking about buying a condominium, a residence in a cooperative, and for that matter, homeowners associations and all of the above. You just heard from Jim Ambrosio. He's regional director of operations at Link Real Estate Group. He's also on the board of the Central Ohio Chapter of the Community Associations Institute. And also with us, Janice Katz, an attorney and senior vice president at General Innovations and Goods, Inc. She wrote an article for the latest edition of the Columbus Bar Lawyers Quarterly about what to look for. Janice, you know, when I was reading your article, it seemed about it's good for anybody to read this, not just lawyers.
Absolutely. That's why I wrote it, because I bought with my husband, we bought a cooperative apartment in Florida, Palm Beach, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And we had a real bargain, and it was a beautiful place. I thought I was living in a impressionist painting. It was so gorgeous. So what we did is we checked it out. We had a good title company look at it. I'm an attorney. I read everything, the bylaws, everything, and we bought. And then when I got on the board, I found all sorts of interesting things. I found we were paying insurance for five buildings, and there were only two buildings. And I managed to get some money back. And I found that although I had been assured the reserves were really funded well, they weren't. So that it could have been catastrophic. And so I wrote this to help everybody understand when you're going into a condo or a cooperative or an HOA, you have to look at everything closely.
You actually have to look at it. In other words, just asking the question about the reserves was not adequate, apparently. You actually had to see the paperwork.
Absolutely. You have to see the paperwork and you have to know what you're looking at. And I think part of the problem is people go into these things and they think, oh, shoo, I don't have to cut the grass anymore. I don't have to do anything anymore. All I do is pay and somebody else does it. And no, you've got a responsibility to watch everything like a hawk. Otherwise, you have no idea what's going on. And the other thing, you have volunteer boards who don't know what they are missing. The person before me as treasurer was a president of a university, and he didn't catch the insurance problem or the reserve problem. And the president was a PhD gym instructor, and she didn't catch anything. And you know, you have other little problems going on too that you have to look for, because insurance in Florida for sure will not pay for the repair of something that is done by some handyman and it breaks. So let's say you have a seawall, which is very useful if you are by the coast, because that prevents the water from coming in and wiping you off, you know, as it rises. Mm-hmm. And that seawall has a crack. You can use somebody to just patch that crack. And the seawall breaks, it floods everything, stuff is washed away. The insurance company says, well, sorry, you didn't have a licensed person doing it.
Okay. They have all their own restrictions. The role of management companies in all of this takes on increased significance, Jim Ambrosio?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're first starting to work with a board, when we're first starting to work with groups, one of the first things that we talk about is what does your reserve situation look like? Frankly, it's been the thing that we've been using as the, you know, whether or not we'll
a litmus test for whether you'll do
whether or not we'll work with a particular association. And, you know, if we do start to work with them, we want to look at that first and say, okay, are we planning appropriately? Because for a group like us, we are going to be of such little value to them if they're not going to have the dollars that are, you know, needed to fund, you know, ongoing maintenance and save money for capital replacements and things like that. So the first job of the management company is to guide the board to bring in the resources necessary, in addition to ourselves, attorneys and engineers and reserve study analysts that can help them put the association on the right financial path.
Do most, you know, condo, co-op, HOAs have a management company doing this kind of thing? Or is that not necessarily the case?
Most of them do, I would say. There are some situations where there's just so little maintenance that's needed. There's a lot of homeowners associations that can theoretically self-manage because their common elements might be limited to a front entrance sign.
It's mostly rules and regulations
It's basically that. But condominium associations almost always should have professional management. There are just too many areas where you need somebody beyond the capacity of a volunteer board member to be focusing their efforts and making sure that, you know, the information is gathered and things are staying according to plan.
You know, I mentioned, Janice, that the and Jim as well, I'm interested to hear what you think, that the Florida legislature is considering enacting laws to oversee, to restrict, to regulate, I guess is the word I'm looking for, these operations. Janice, I mean, do you see that happening across the country because of this, or what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I hear noise that it will happen. I haven't seen anything yet. And I'm watching that, but I do think, you also have another problem that Jim didn't mention, and that problem is the residents of the association. Because if you come to them and say, hey, gosh, we need a reserve, and it's really important, so we're going to up you, say 20%, and that goes to partially fill the reserve each year. So we're building towards that seawall or whatever, roof or whatever. And they say, well, why want to do that? Because I'm 75 years old, and I don't want to pay for somebody to follow me. I want to keep my money. I want to take my money and take my grandkids on a trip. So then you get into a dilemma, and that
Interesting.
seawall gets a crack, and you have to have a special assessment, and here's 60,000 a person or something. And I'm using seawall because that's
Yeah, don't get
it's
excited, everybody. We're not, Ohio's not beachfront
we don't have not
yet.
yet,
But
but
Jim Ambrosio, we talked about
interesting.
that before, how I'm kind of, thought about a condo going forward, and one of the first things people will say to me is, well, they have a high HOA. Well, it's expensive there. And I think, well, that's not really the question you should be asking. It's not how much, it's what are you doing with it?
Exactly. Yeah, there's a stigma around high HOA dues, and sometimes people associate that with, the board is just collecting money for no reason, or homeowners will get upset if their fees are very high, but they're not seeing it put into action. So if very attractive aesthetic projects such as, landscaping replacements or, asphalt seal coating or things like that are not getting done regularly, they're thinking, what is my money going to? It's not fun to just think that your money is getting parked into a savings account for the next 15 years to pay for new roofs. And so to her point, it's exactly the pushback that you get from a lot of owners, especially older ones that have lived in the community for a long time.
So those in the business, like you are, what are your thoughts about having legislative prescriptions enacted?
Yeah, I know that government oversight it can become a pretty heated topic in a lot of different areas, but I for one do think that it would be good to have some type of regulatory agency overseeing the industry, specifically when it comes to reserve funding and making sure that associations and management companies that are working with them are held accountable to see that these associations are funding the way that they should be.
Yeah, and Janice Katz, I mean, things like inspections, mandatory inspections, and those kinds of things. What are your? I mean, is that something that would a good HOA would be doing anyways?
Maybe, maybe not.
Okay.
It just depends on, I think that's what's the difference between, the two buildings. There were two buildings there, Champlain South was the one that collapsed, and the other one didn't. And the one took care of itself, and the other one
Yeah.
didn't. And if you remember, the engineer who looked at it basically gave it a pass, and it was in bad shape. So there were a whole set of things going wrong there. And I just don't know. You're dealing also with people who are buying and having the fantasy about how they're going to live their last few years in a comfortable place without doing anything, and they don't want to pay more than they have to into that
And
money,
I
into
think
that
you made a
fund.
really interesting point,
Right.
is depending
And
on the
then,
age. Yeah.
right. And you also, there are other issues too that a condo development can give a license to people to use certain facilities, and then they expand and they can change that your charter or your constitution or something and take away your license or your rights. I think there was a case a few years ago here in Ohio where that happened. And there was a fight over trying to keep the condo number one paying while it no longer had use for the ability to use the
Oh, interesting. Okay. Huh. Okay. I get it.
So
Well, let
and this is another thing you have to really, really watch as a owner.
we will get back to it. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to calls. If you have a question or comment, Give us a call and share your thoughts, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have taken the opportunity to revisit the issue of what your rights and responsibilities are when it comes to participating in a condo association, a cooperative association, or a homeowners association in the state of Ohio, given the collapse of the Surfside condominium last summer. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. Condominiums in some communities are looked upon favorably by people who might be downsizing or want the benefits of homeownership without being bothered by the maintenance or upkeep. But before you buy, make sure you find out how they manage the building fees and maintenance. We're looking at the role of condo associations, how they operate, and how they manage finances and building maintenance. Still with us, Janice Katz, attorney and senior vice president at General Innovations and Goods, Inc. She wrote an article on this topic for Columbus Bar Lawyers Quarterly Spring 2022, which you can probably find. You can check it out, but we'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Also with us, Jim Ambrosio. He's Regional Director of Operations at Link Real Estate, and he's on the board of the Central Ohio Chapter of the Community Associations Institute. That's an education and advocacy group made up of homeowner and condo association board members and the professionals who service those communities. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. Jim, I mentioned earlier that what happened in Surfside is really a function of the climate down there, obviously. But Ohio has its own climate issues, too. What are, like, the maintenance issues for Central Ohio that people should be aware of and think about?
Yeah, in this area, it's definitely weather-related and water-related. So one of the biggest issues that we've seen is with a lot of buildings that were built prior to the mid-2000s, when what a lot of people know as Tyvek, or weather-resistant barrier, was part of building code. A lot of buildings were just put together with the OSB, so the wood, the bare wood, and then the siding or brick or whatever just put right over top of that. And over the years, water finds its way in. It is really shocking sometimes to see where it enters and then where it appears from. But we've seen time and time again cases where you pull the siding off and the wood that's behind it could be black because it's just been deteriorating for such a long period of time. And so that's one of the things that is absolutely crucial to be part of those engineer inspections that associations should be getting done when the property reaches a certain age to make sure that you can address those things before they become any worse.
Janice, before we get to some calls, I wanted you to kind of give us a little primer on the difference between these kinds of entities, a cooperative, a condominium, an HOA. I mean, I guess HOA could be with a cooperative or a condo, right?
It could be, yes. But, the basic thing, they're all called common interest communities. And I think what you should look at first is the extremes is I rent property, I own nothing, I have a license to use certain things. I own property, it's mine, it's my responsibility, the land, the grass. If I have a pool, I have to clean it and fish out the raccoons that drown in it. It's my responsibility to keep people off, to keep them out of the pool, whatever. If I have a cooperative, it's like owning shares of the building. I own a share of, or depending on the size of the unit, I own a share of this building and I get to lease a unit to live in it as long as I own those shares. And when I go to sell it, it's like selling shares. It's very easy mm-hmm. to sell it. It also is easy in Florida. I don't think this is an Ohio problem yet, but it's also a New York problem. If a developer gets 2/3 of the shares, it's his unit.
Okay.
And now you get a condo. You own the condo and the appurtenances, the things around it. It's yours. It's your real estate property, just like your house is real property, not personal property like the co-op. It's real property. And you have a right, usually you have a license, and it's a perpetual license to use the swimming pool and whatever, and that's part of you, and you get assessed for paying it and maintaining it, and that's part of it. The HOA means basically that you own the real property, and all of the other stuff is owned by the homeowners association. So that's it. In essence, it's really different from a cooperative for sure, and from a condo, because the condo you own,
okay,
you have that right. It's partially yours, or whatever. But with the HOA, it's not yours at all. It's not.
Okay.
They can do whatever they want with it.
So. Let's see. Bill in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
I'm a retired insurance agent, and at one point in time, I had about 50 or so condo associations as customers. And where to begin with the mistakes that I see, I don't even know. But one of the most common areas that people would get ready to buy a condo association or a condo policy, condominium unit, mm-hmm. and then they would buy an insurance policy for it. Years ago, the banks did not require an insurance policy, but over the last 10, 15 years, because of the amount of leverage with mortgages and things being done, associations or banks would require insurance policies. Now, what I found is many times customers would call me and say, my insurance agent says I need a homeowner's policy, or I don't. There's a lot of confusion, so make sure that it's an HO6 when somebody buys it. And then there's some compartments in there, or parts in that policy, that are going to do a lot of good things, like loss assessment. And I think the attorneys can and property manager can speak to the results of people not having enough loss assessment coverage. But it's very inexpensive. So the condo policy is based on personal property, real property, which the mortgage company would be interested in, and then other things, liability. I would really encourage anybody that's going into a condo or a condo-type situation mm-hmm. is to get a liability umbrella policy of $2, $3, $4, $5 million. The risks involved with sharing your life, I always said condos are like church except for there's no God, and everybody's kind of at odds. So just... I've been to a lot of meetings, and some of them are just awesome, and some of them are—I just sit there in sheer terror. I wonder what it would be like to live in that place, but no names.
Yeah.
Anyway, there.
Okay. Well, Bill, thank you. That's some great advice. The whole insurance thing. Thanks for giving us a call. And does that resonate with you, Janice Katz?
Yes, it does. And I think I wasn't quite clear. I think on insurance. And Bill pointed out you have to have personal insurance for your property, because even if you are just leasing a condo, a cooperative apartment, you need that interior insurance and you need the liability insurance. The building has separate insurance, and you have to check that and make sure that is good also. And another thing I forgot to add too is you need to check the status of the co-op or the HOA or the condo EIN corporate status. Corporate
okay.
status.
Okay. What would they be looking for, Jim Ambrosio, to check the corporate status?
I think that's probably more something for the board to review with their attorney, just to make sure that the association is the proper legal entity for providing and not providing things to its individual unit owners who buy into it.
I wanted to go back. I think, Joyce, it was something you brought up that a member association member's physical status changed, they can't use the pool anymore. Why should they have to pay for using the pool, right? Or the
that was the whole thing. They had a license to use it, and it was supposedly a perpetual license, and it was written into the charter it was perpetual license. And then the charter was changed by the board, I guess, or by the condo owner. I don't remember. It was a while I looked at it. And they no longer had use of those facilities, nor that, but they were supposed to be paying for 62% of their maintenance. And the argument is, why should they pay?
Right.
Why should they pay if they no longer have the use for it? It didn't belong to them anymore.
So then thoroughly understanding what your money is supposed to be covering that you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What it can cover and what. And so you have to watch what happened is they changed the charter and they changed it in such a way that they negated this perpetual license.
I've got a caller here, Arlen, in Columbus. You're on the air. I guess this kind of gets to the issue of, you know, rallying the troops and understanding when things change. Arlen, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you, Ann.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this gets to what you were getting at, that there are downsides to associations and homeowners associations, no way around that. But an unintended thing that I don't think necessarily people will think about at the time, it gives you an ability to organize the interests of your local community. And for a specific example, a couple years ago, there was a parcel of land that was for sale across the street from us. I live off of No Bixby Road, just south of Broad Street on the east side.
Mm-hmm.
And the homeowner association to the south of our condos, my condo, and then condos directly north of us all kind of made a triple alliance and leveraged the strength of the community through our associations, including some of the non-aligned homes, and were able to then get that land purchased by the Department of Park and Recreation instead of having that develop and tear down this, you know, wonderful nature preserve along that, you know, really pretty area along the Bixby Road.
Uh-huh.
So maybe something people don't realize. And I know also on McNaughton Road, that's on the other side of 270, they attempted to do the same thing, also repeat that a few years ago as well. I don't know how it worked out for them, but they tried to do the same thing through the association. So it enables you potentially to leverage the strength of the community much more easily with those associations. So I'll take my comment up here.
Thanks, Arlen. That's interesting. It's a force. I mean, it can be a force for good. Jim Ambrosio, it sounds
civility
like.
Civility is not yet dead.
So, I mean, you do kind of have this built-in group of people, of constituents, of all things being equal, like-minded people.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of the conversation right now it seems doom and gloom, but it really shouldn't be. There are very important things that associations need to overcome, but you know what an association does provide is a forum for neighbors to get together and work these things out. And you know, things like, you know, annual association meetings and things like that should be highly attended because people should be informed of what's going on in their community and understand not only what the problems are, but what the potential solutions are and how they can work with their board and work with their management company and other people to try to solve them.
Yeah, I mean, there is an obligation, right, Janice? It's like
a
buyer beware. This is part, you know, you've got to show up.
Absolutely. That's the whole key. You have to make yourself take the time to be part of the community and to watch everything and to open your mouth. I'm very good at opening my mouth, but I'll open your mouth and say no, this is wrong. If it's wrong, and stop it before it really gets started, or build a coalition and try and stop it. Sometimes you can't, but if you get enough people alert and aware that there's a problem and something serious is going to happen if you don't do something about it, there's a good chance you can make sure it happens in a positive manner.
Is there, you show up for the meetings, you do your due diligence beforehand. I mean, I guess this is a due diligence question before you buy. I would not consider myself qualified to look over any legal document and decide, is this something where if you, you know, I know this is a, you know, full employment, self-employment thing for you, but Janice Katz, I mean, would you recommend people get...
I highly recommend that you have a professional who understands the condo or co-op law of wherever you're buying, or HOA law, and who can look at that. And I also would, you know, make sure that the engineering reports are looked at, and somebody, and they look at the finances and the management company, how the management company works, if they actually have a management company, which I know smaller entities don't. And it's all volunteers, and half of them don't know what they're doing.
Well, sometimes I see condos for sale that are just part of like a duplex, or just a group of duplexes is really what it boils down to. Jim Ambrosio, I mean, that's kind of different and something to be aware of.
It can be. Yeah, you can have a condominium association that is as small as two units,
yeah.
Which makes it really easy to get everybody together. So you can also have something what very looks like a condo to a lot of people walking down the street, but might have a different, you know, structure to it, where the owner, I used to own one of them actually, where I was fully responsible for the exterior of the building, you know, roof down. And so there's, you know, plenty of different types of entities that are created when those buildings are constructed. And so you really should know what you're getting into.
We are talking about knowing what you get into when you buy a condo, buy a share in a cooperative, or even a home in a community where there's a homeowners association, what your rights and regulations, what your obligations are, most importantly, as far as knowing what you're getting into. That is Jim Ambrosio. He's Regional Director of Operations at Link Real Estate Group. He's also on the board of the Central Ohio Chapter of the Community Associations Institute. And also with us, Janice Katz. She's an attorney, Senior Vice President at General Innovations and Goods, Inc. And she wrote for the Columbus Bar Lawyers Quarterly Spring 2022 edition. And our basic information, it's titled For Those Looking to Move to Condominiums, Cooperatives, and HOAs. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're looking at the role of condo associations, how they operate, and how they manage finances and building maintenance. Still with us, Janice Katz. She's an attorney. She wrote an article for the Columbus Bar Lawyers Quarterly Spring 2022 about what to think about when you're moving to a condominium, a cooperative, or HOA. And also with us, Jim Ambrosio. He is on the board of the Central Ohio Chapter of the Community Associations Institute. And that's an education and advocacy organization made up of homeowner and condo association board members and the people who service those communities. 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment for our guests. A couple I wanted to get into the issue of rental units and the number of rental units and that whole kind of controversy. It came into pretty stark relief during the recession, Janice Katz, when some, you know, that they were going into receivership or foreclosure. The renters didn't know it necessarily, or the owners were going into foreclosure, and a lot of the condominium complexes were kind of ghost towns for a while. What about regulations regarding that issue?
Well, I am a big supporter of regulations because I think they are very useful if you write them correctly and if you have the correct people watching them. They're very useful. And I think this is an area where they need some, because, you know, you are living in your property and you think, I'm going to live here for 15 years. And then all of a sudden it, you find out it's turning into a rental unit, or you think you're renting this property and it's affordable, and all of a sudden it's going to turn into a high priced condo and you're pushed out. It's very disruptive to a community. You have a community of people and they're living there and they get used to each other and they like it, or they would have left anyway, and they're pushed out and they have to find something else. There should be some kind, I personally think that there should be some kind of a regulation to help, you know, limit this to only necessary situations, and to help people who are owners or who are living in a place, in a community, maintain their property, or at least move to someplace else as a community, to move them over.
Okay.
To help. And it's my personal opinion. And can I just give a little tiny plug for the Columbus Bar Association, because it's got all sorts of information there, including magazines. You can just go click and get all these magazines. A lot of articles are written for lay people as well as for attorneys. And they also have attorneys there. You can go click and find out.
Yeah. We'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. So we were talking off the air about the issue of rental units, and some associations limit the number. What makes sense to you, Jim Ambrosio?
I've never really been one that tries to hone in on a certain percentage. I think that my personal opinion is that, you know, boards and management companies and associations in general should be focusing on turnover. Rental units get a negative stigma in the industry, but I think the reason for that is the high turnover. If you have a new person coming in every 12 months, it's somebody that's unfamiliar with the rules and regs of the community. They're moving in, they're moving out, there's furniture and trash and things like that. I think that, you know, investor units, people that are buying condos and then renting them out, tend to be regular payers. They don't fall delinquent, so they're funding the association the way that you would want them to be. And if they have stable renters in there that are abiding by the rules and regulations of the community and getting along with the owner occupants in the community, you would like to think that they'd want to live there for a while. And with the market conditions the way that they have been trending, I think that, you know, rentals of condominium units and single family homes and homeowners associations are going to be, you know, more prevalent and not less. And so I think it's going to be crucially important for everybody to sort of get used to a higher percentage of rental units and figure out how to make it work best for everybody.
And then as far as helping people stay in condos, you said there's legislation pending?
There is, yeah. So CAI...
at the federal level, yeah.
Absolutely. CAI, the organization that I'm a part of, has people in D.C. that are working with federal legislators on ways to help homeowners in associations that may be in a spot where they need to fund, you know, capital replacement projects or deferred maintenance, and they don't have the reserves set aside because they haven't been doing that for the last 10, 15, 20 years. And so there's a couple of things that are being done that I'm hopeful we'll be able to kind of reach the finish line. One topic is of special assessments, which is a dirty word in the industry that owners don't want to hear. They don't want to talk about it in meetings.
Well, if the drain tiles suddenly fall apart.
Exactly. And so what this legislation is trying to accomplish is to be able to treat a special assessment similarly to how, like, a home equity line of credit has been done in the past, where a homeowner will essentially be able to sort of refinance their mortgage to add in the cost of that special assessment and then pay for it over, you know, the term of the rest of their mortgage, rather than having to cough up, you know, the $10,000 or $15,000, whatever it might be. It'll enable them to, you know, A, keep their home, and B, improve the community.
Because right now you can't do that.
Correct.
You just have to pull the money out of somewhere.
There might be certain lenders that allow for it, but I think that the federal legislation is trying to make that much more commonplace for owners and associations like that.
Yeah, it makes sense, Janice?
Yes, it does make sense. I just want to add, there's two different issues there. And one issue is being able to stay in the apartment because you can't afford the special assessment. And that's a very interesting piece of legislation going through. Hopefully it will go through. The other issue is if you have a unit, you have your own unit, and you have allowing rental of units, you never know who your neighbors are. And it's disconcerting. You might have a nice neighbor one day, and the next day you have a drunk. And it's so there's a stability when a whole building has to make a decision of whether it wants to be allow these rentals. So most rentals are long term, in units, because they don't want to have this constant turnover and constant who's my.
In other words, they don't want a vacation rental by owner situation or what's the other Airbnb kind of a situation? That's
correct.
Different.
Airbnb.
That's different than what we're talking about.
Right.
We got an email from Brad in Columbus. He writes, I bought a condo in 2009 that had a low monthly charge that was very appealing, but the reason it was so low is that no one was building up the reserves, and when the time came for repairs to the driveway or a fresh coat of paint for the development, we were all assessed big money, and it kept happening every few months in special assessments. He says, I partially blame the fact that few people around here use attorneys for real estate deals. An attorney will basically apply the pessimistic worst-case scenario approach and tell you what bad things could happen, while a realtor is more interested in making sure the deal gets done and everyone is happy, and then they go away. Thoughts about that? I mean, is there a role for real estate agents in all of this, Jim?
I think that there is. I certainly understand that they have a lot going on, and they're trying to push a lot of things to the finish line all at the same time. So I don't want to put too much of the burden on real estate mm-hmm. agents, but I do think that real estate agents, title companies, lenders, everybody that's sort of involved in that process needs to be making it more of a priority to understand the association that your potential buyer is interested in, and making sure that they have the information needed and knowing what they're looking at. They don't have to be a subject matter expert, but just something as simple as understanding what a reserve study is and comparing that to what the bank balance of the association is could be a great start.
I mean, I guess I would rather have an agent say to me versus what I've heard is commenting on the cost of the monthly, however you pay, your annual assessment. I'd rather have them say how good that association is at managing. But there are no rating systems out there, right? There are no standards. It's everyone unto itself.
Yeah, no standards.
Okay. Well, which brings us to Bill in Columbus. You have a question. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. And I know we're running short on time. A person to answer the phone was very helpful. Let me try to keep the question short.
Sure.
It's about HOAs. Live in a community with an HOA. You have a management company. It enforces deed restrictions, the sign, whatever. But the real question is, when all the property is sold, the trustees transfer from the developer over to the actual owner.
Mm-hmm.
So we have three trustees. They're supposed to appoint three officers, which could be the trustees or other members of the group. But bottom line is, what kind of publishing requirements does the HOA or the trustees group have? Like a financial, who the trustees are, who the officers are.
Let me ask Janice Katz, is there a legal requirement along these lines?
I would need to read what the charter is there and the HOA regulations.
But there's no overarching state law that says HOAs have to publish annual financial reports.
Well, they should publish.
They should.
They are supposed to provide that at annual meetings.
Okay. And it should. That's not a law, though, right, Jim Ambrosio? I mean, they may not.
Correct. Yeah, it's not a law. What most declarations, so a lot of these associations will be governed by a declaration, and what most of them will say is that at a minimum, it has to produce something on an annual basis, so an annual financial report. Even if it's not something that the board or the management company is voluntarily doing, every owner in an association has the right to ask for those documents. And our company and most companies in our industry are utilizing technology now to make that more efficient. Mm-hmm. So rather than wait for them to request it and then email it over, mail it or something like that, we just post it online and say, here's where you can go and get it. And then, you know, it's just educating owners to know where to go. And, you know, with a couple of button clicks, you could be accessing that information for your condominium association, your HOA, wherever you happen to live.
With the Champlain Towers South building in Surfside that collapsed last year, one of the things that immediately became apparent is a lot of the people there were renters who didn't know, they didn't think, they didn't have access to the information that might have helped them make that choice. So this is sort of a renter beware thing, too. If you're going to rent someplace, for heaven's sakes, I mean, if it's something like that, although in Ohio, it's hard to imagine something like that happening. But Janice Katz, what about renters? What is it their obligation to get the information, or does their landlord or landlady, you know, have a role in that?
I would think that it is the renter is a renter beware situation, because there is no requirement for a landlord to say anything. And I do know some people who have exaggerated about what kind of reserves they have. Back to your statement about the realtor, I think, you know, you're asking too much of a realtor to understand and go in and make sure that there's been an engineering report and everything else. The realtors should say, let's see if we can get you this and this and this, and then have a lawyer or somebody analyze it. And you don't know. I know of a building, and again, I go in Florida because Florida's got quite a few disaster situations down there. The building was for profit, and they switched it to not for profit. But the attorney who switched it and the board didn't realize that before you close the for-profit, you have to make sure that all the assets of the building are in the not-for-profit. Mm. So they closed it and no assets were in this new not-for-profit. 14 title companies looked at this and didn't catch it. Mm. And they missed it. And there was when inspectors came, they didn't catch it. Nobody caught this until a developer came in and tried to use that to leverage for a lower price.
Okay.
So, you know, it's there's all sorts of little issues you have to look for and to protect yourself. And as a renter, you really should, you know, may have these condos and co-ops and HOAs have facilities that most of us can't afford. We can't afford to have two or three tennis courts in the back and three or four swimming pools and a dock. Most of us, there are a few of us who can't, but and that's very nice. You can, you know, it's very easy. You get to go walk out and you don't have to worry about who's cleaning the pool. But you should, because the pool may not be clean and they may not be keeping it up to standard.
And then what's your recourse?
Yes. And you should know what that is.
So just Jim Ambrosio, we're just about out of time. We just have about a minute left. I'm wondering about your final thoughts on this. And if it's the tragedy in Florida was horrible. And you made the point, I think, last time you were on that, you know, the likelihood of something like that happening in Ohio is not so great. But.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to have, we're very unlikely to have something like that happen here. But there are things that we need to be paying attention to in our climate. You know, like I mentioned earlier, water getting behind the pretty exterior structure of the building and causing problems that are unseen until you start to remove things. So the final thought that I would give to homeowners is just to, you know, pay attention, you know, read the documents that are coming from your management company. It's not always, bad news. Sometimes it's informative, and we really are trying to move everybody in the right direction to make sure that we're, you know, looking at the, you know, the problems from the past and making sure that they're not repeated.
Jim Ambrosio, Regional Director of Operations at Link Real Estate Group. He's on the board of the Central Ohio Chapter of the Community Associations Institute. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And Janice Katz, Attorney, Senior Vice President at General Innovations and Goods, Inc. She wrote a great article for the Columbus Bar Lawyers Quarterly about what you need to know if you're thinking about a condo, co-op, or an HOA. Janice, thanks again. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. It was fun. Thank you, everybody.
And thanks to everybody for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.